The 27th chapter of Mishlei, and it starts off with a bang. 27th chapter, Perek Chav Zayin. Shlomo HaMelech says, this is a really important concept, Al tis halel b'yom achar. Do not overly praise or be, what do you say? Boast? Yeah, don't boast or talk about what will be tomorrow. Kilo seda mayelad yom, because you don't know what comes from the day, meaning today, which is a wonderful, wonderful encapsulation of that Yiddish phrase that everyone loves to quote to their kids. You know, man plans, God laughs, type of thing. Don't count your chickens. All these different idioms that mean the same thing. I happen to take a little bit of a different interpretation of this, because the word tit halel, I think is somewhat of an indicator. The Midrash of it says, as we've said already, Al tishtabeach atzmecha, don't praise yourself. B'masha tavtiach lasos b'yom achar, don't say, oh, tomorrow, you know what I'm going to do tomorrow, X, Y, and Z, the other thing. Ki lo teda ma davar yikreh, you don't know what's going to happen. Ki pen yikreh davar shalotu chalosahu, maybe something's going to happen that's going to prevent you from doing that thing tomorrow. So, right, so the conventional understanding is don't praise or look forward or boast about what's going to happen tomorrow, because maybe you won't be able to do it tomorrow. You know, people think that sometimes I go overboard with my Emir Tzashems. Everything's Emir Tzashem. Unless you're talking about the past, so it's only going to happen in the future if Hashem wants it to happen. So so that's certainly one concept, the conventional understanding of this pasuk. I think I've quoted in the past that song. What's that song again? Beautiful Boy. Whose song is that? I don't remember. Is that John Lennon or something? I don't know.
Why not just do not boast, period? Because you could boast about something in the past, too.
Good. So that's actually, that's a somewhat of a segue into a concept that I wanted to talk about. It's actually relevant to tomorrow, to the next pasuk, sorry. To the next pasuk, where it does talk about who should praise and who shouldn't praise. So we'll hold that thought until the next pasuk. What did you say? John Lennon, Beautiful Boy. He has like a line in there where he says, you know, life is what happens to you when you're busy making other plans. Mm-hmm. Right? So this is just another nice encapsulation of the same concept, that you think you're going to do one thing, you end up doing another thing. So what I wanted to think was something that I already had thought, and then I saw it here in the art scroll footnote. They say homiletically. I don't think it's so homiletical, but it says here from the Beis Yaakov of Ishbitz, or of Yaakov Liner, who is the son of the Me'a Shiloach. I think he's the son or grandson. Yeah, no, the son. His son is the one with the Radziner Tcheles. People are familiar with that dark blue Tcheles strings, the one that I would discourage you from buying. But if you're Radzin or Ishbitz, so like you can go for it. That's your Masorah. This was the big debate between him and Rav Herzog, original Rav Herzog. Either way, so they say here from the Beis Yaakov, homiletically, even if you are right that tomorrow will be successful, it might be true. You might be able to do something very important tomorrow. Nonetheless, you must not neglect today. You must never think only about the future and neglect the present. Which I wanted to say, within the pshat of the pasuk, I don't think this is drash. It called that homiletical. But I think that Shlomo HaMelech might mean, Al yisal b'yom achar kilo sedam ayel yom. Don't praise what you're going to do tomorrow. Don't boast about what we're going to do tomorrow. You can still do things today. That's what kilo sedam ayel yom doesn't mean. You don't know what's going to happen. Maybe you won't be able to do it tomorrow. That's not what the pasuk doesn't say that. Kilo sedam means you don't know what you could even do today. Maybe an opportunity is going to come and, you know, fall into your lap, you know, today that you won't be able to, or that will be more important than what you do tomorrow. The point is that we can't allow time to pass by as if it's just one of these things. Like, okay, you know, and so many people live this way, and sometimes I do, so I'm not criticizing other people to the exclusion of myself, that we live from momentous occasion to momentous occasion. I talked about this a couple months ago. You live from one important thing to another important thing. When did I talk about this? The importance of, I talked about it Yom Kippur morning. I spoke about the Ish Iti. The Ish Iti is the person, anyone know who the Ish Iti is? Remember my drasha from a couple months ago? Ish Iti, if you look at the psukim in the beginning of, at the beginning of Achrei Mos, which we lay on Yom Kippur morning. So it says that you take the Seir LaHashem, you bring the Mizbeach, and that's the thing you sprinkle, and Echad ve'echad, Shnayim ve'echad, you know the whole thing we do in Musaf. So that's the one goat. And then you have the other goat, the Seir LaAzazel. What happens to the Seir LaAzazel?
Yeah.
Pushed off the cliff. Who throws it in the cliff?
Off the cliff? I don't know.
Who throws it off the cliff?
Not the Kohen Gadol.
The Kohen Gadol's busy.
Yeah,
somebody else takes him there. The guy who takes him there is called the Ish Iti.
Oh, right.
The Ish Iti Hamidbara. He takes him. So what is Ish Iti? The letters E-T are Ayin Taf Yud. E-T. Sounds like time. Ish Iti. So I made a whole drasha about how this is the person that makes every moment count. You know, for him, every single moment, every single step that he takes is an important, mission for all of Klal Yisrael to be forgiven. Every moment that he gets closer to the cliff is an important thing. Ish Iti. So the point is, we can't just neglect time. We can't just say, okay, today's an important event. Oh, that's why I talked about it, because I looped it into a appeal, of course, on Yom Kippur. Actually, I think it was Yom Kippur night, where I spoke about how people in the shul are here all the time. You know, Baruch Hashem, we come together for Yom Kippur, and it's beautiful that we're all here. But some people here are only Monday morning people. And some people are only, Thursday, Pshisch on the Parsha people. And every person has their time. And the point is that we have moments throughout the day that other people find meaningful. And our job as a shul is to make sure that everyone has those moments to make them meaningful. So in the same sense that the Ish Iti was the one who made every moment meaningful, not everybody has the same meaningful moments, but we have to make sure that they're all available to everyone at those moments. So that's why I ask people to support the shul in that way. So here, sometimes we think to ourselves, I'm looking forward to tomorrow, because tomorrow I get to do this. And the word machar, at least biblically, doesn't literally mean tomorrow. It can mean in the future, right? When Hashem says in the end of Parshas Bo, which is an introduction to one of the four questions, right? Kisish al bincha machar, when your son will ask tomorrow. Rashi says over there, it doesn't mean tomorrow literally. It means in the future, when your child will ask, right? Mahavora zos lachem. So the word machar can mean in the future. And sometimes we live like this. We live, with the excitement. Oh, my kids are like this. My kids, they're kids. So this week, a couple weeks ago, Bubby and Zadie came for Thanksgiving.
Yeah.
So what did I hear for the 3 weeks leading up to Thanksgiving? 21 days till Bubby comes.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
13 days till Bubby comes. 10 days, what about today? What are you going to do today? Yeah. Right. So as adults, we have to have a greater maturity level and say, we can make today important. Yes, that thing is important and we should look forward to it, but we have to find ways to make today important also. So that's what I think that Shlomo Melech said. Al tisal b'yom achar. Don't simply praise or boast what's going to happen in the future. Ki lo seda mayeh l'adam. You don't know what you can make of today. Always look at today as a new opportunity to make something praiseworthy. And that's what I think Shlomo Melech is saying. But yes, conventional wisdom and the Mefarshim all basically point to the interpretation that don't praise what you're going to do in the future because you don't know what's going to happen and maybe you won't be able to do it. So that's why it's important to say Mir Tashem whenever you do things like that. But I wanted to say even deeper, which is similar to this concept brought down in the art scroll by the Ishpitzer, that you should make the most of everything today, even though you have something to look forward to tomorrow, whenever that might be. And then the next pasuk, Chav Zayin Beis. I've got a chat here. Let's see. Steve, thank you. The pasuk says, Yehalel Chazar V'lo Picha. Some will say that this is referring to, the Mesudas David says, Ritzon Olomar Af V'davar Shekvar Sisa. So the first pasuk was talking about the thing that you're going to do. Now the second pasuk is talking about the thing you already did. So lest you think, Shlomo Melech says, you can't boast about what you're going to do in the future. So what's the implication? As Meir said before, maybe you'll boast about what actually already happened.
Yeah.
You know? So Meir's point was like, why does it say don't boast about tomorrow?
Yeah.
Are you allowed to boast about a time that's not tomorrow? Says Shlomo Melech, no, even that you can't do. Mm-hmm. Well, we'll see there's an exception to that. Instead, Yehalel Chazar v'lo ficha. Rather, allow someone else to praise you and not your own mouth. Nachri ve'al svasecha, which sounds like the same thing, just in different words, but as you can tell, the words are different, and therefore they probably mean something else. V'lo ficha, right? Someone else should praise you and not your own mouth. Nachri means a foreigner, ve'al svasecha, and not your lips. Sounds like the same thing, meaning don't praise yourself. Right, as I like to say, don't break your arm patting yourself on the back. You know, don't be complimentary of yourself. Don't toot your own horn. Yeah, a bunch of, you know, don't get a big head. Yeah, there are a bunch of different things that that you could use as an idiom for this concept. The question that we have is, what is the difference between zar and nachri, and what's the difference between picha and svasecha? If you look at Mesudas David, yeah, he says there's no difference. Hu kefel hadavar b'milim shonos. Same words, same concept, with different words.
Yeah, but we passed through the talk that there's a big difference.
Ah, so that the Mesudas David says there's no difference.
Yeah.
The Malbim says there is a difference. What do you think the difference is, Mary? Do you have an idea?
One is the act, and one's more of an action of coming out of your mouth.
Okay.
We talked that there was a difference between the two
of them. Right.
Well, what about the stranger?
Right, so we have talked about sfatayim before.
Yeah.
We've talked about lips.
Yeah.
Usually what we mean by lips is something external, superficial.
Yeah.
And lashon, or peh, is something internal,
yeah,
meaning intrinsic versus extrinsic. So hold that thought. We'll see in the Malbim in a second. We also have to figure out zar versus nachri. I actually spoke about, tangentially or by implication maybe, the word nachri on Shabbos. Yosef HaTzadik in this week's Parsha, when he sees the brothers for the first time coming to Egypt, so what does he say? The Pasuk says, Vayakiru, Vayakiru Yosef. What does it say? V'Yosef Hikiram, maybe? Yosef recognized them. But then he says, the Pasuk says the phrase, Vayisnaker Alehem. Vayisnaker, it's like a play on the word. Hikir means to recognize. Vayisnaker means to make foreign, like a nachri. The word lahakir and the word nachri are actually opposites. They're opposites. Someone told me that Rav Hirsch talks about that in this week's parsha also, that the word vayitznaker and the word lahakir sound like opposites, but they really mean the same thing. What does that mean? Says Rav Hirsch, when something is so different and foreign, then it's clearly recognizable. It's a brilliant insight that why the two words are related, because they're the same thing. What do you recognize? You more readily recognize the things that stick out, that don't fit, that are foreign. If everybody's the same, you're not going to recognize anyone. If everybody's the same, but one person's different, so that's the foreigner, but you recognize him first, right? This is just basic psychology, that if you put something unexpected in a bunch of expected things, that's what people will gravitate towards. Hey, that's different, right? This is the concept between those weird commercials you find. You know, people remember these weird commercials. One time there was a commercial about like, whatever, you don't have to talk about it, but different weird things. Yeah. Weird things, unexpected things are memorable. The Heath brothers talk about that in Made to Stick, what things are memorable. But he says, so this pasuk, the word nachri means foreign, which is on the one hand recognizable, but is on the other hand different, or someone that's not familiar. So says the Malbim like this. What?
So you said
Yosef. Yeah.
So he made himself foreign, like disguised himself.
Right, disguised himself. The Rashi says on that pasuk that he had a beard. Some say that he spoke in Egyptian as opposed to Hebrew. Right? We know those midrashim that he really heard what they were saying.
Yeah.
They thought that he didn't know what they were saying because he only ever spoke to them in Egyptian. Yeah. So the Malbim says on this pasuk, what are the differences? V'yesh hevdel bein zar u bein nachri. There's a difference between a zar and a nachri. Shah nachri hu me eret acheres. Nachri is someone who's literally foreign from another land. Va'amar sha'achar she yehalelcha zar, az yehalelcha gam ha'nachri she'enu makir otcha. It's one thing to be praised by someone who knows you, who's a zar. Zar means just someone who's not you. Zar is just, it also means foreign, but not as foreign. Zar just means a stranger, or not stranger in this case, but for the Lamba, but someone who's not you, right? Lo picha is the definition of zar.
So Nachri is more distant than
zar. Nachri is someone who doesn't even know who you are.
Okay,
right, I hear that. So says the Malbim, the zar is someone who is not you, but he praises you. And if you're really doing well, if you're doing the right thing, so then even the Nachri will praise you. And then also they will praise the Al. This is actually a Hasidish drasha from the Malbim. I don't mean that literally. I mean that just in terms of the style. He says, if you read the words, and I don't know how you translate it there. What's the end of the phrase according to the Art Scroll translation? Do you have it, Sarita?
No.
The end of two?
Not your own lips.
Oh, maybe you have. Who has the Art Scroll here?
Not your own lips.
What is it?
Not your own lips.
Not your own lips. Right, not your own lips. So says the Malbim, Nachri will praise you, the foreigner will praise you, V'al Svasecha. You know who else the Nachri is going to praise? The no of your lips. What does it mean he's going to praise the no of your lips? Says the Malbim, it's kind of a beautiful drasha. Masha atabes of sechalo tishalo. The Nachri will praise how you're not praising yourself. Someone will say, how do you think you did today? And your answer will be, I don't know, not for me to judge. And the person will respond, that's very noble of you to not praise yourself. Meaning that's what the Malbim says, Nachri ve'al svasecha. They will praise the al, the no of your lips. The fact that you reject speaking, judging yourself, is itself going to be praised. Kizemora al hanava v'hamala, says the Malbim, that is a indicator of your own anivas, your own humility. Obviously, it has to be sincere. V'hinei asafa chitzonis neged hapeh, and the word, says the Malbim, safa is external, which is the opposite of the mouth. V'rotza lomar, mashalo yishama mimcha mehalel atzmecha misvasecha. That which will, mashalo yishama mimcha, that which will, they will not hear from you, mehalel atzmecha misvasecha, you will be praised from your lips, from the fact that they're not saying anything. That kind of thing. V'gam sheyishma al misvasecha, v'rotzalom she'ata takti natzmecha v'tomar, She'ein b'chasi lazos. Says the Malbim, it can either go as far as to say, it can even mean as far as to say, that when that person will praise you, you'll say, no, 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 that's not true. Right? Even that much will also be praised. She'ein b'chasi lazos. Because of, okay, the other things that Gemara says. So that's another example of it. Interestingly enough, I mentioned to Meir before that there was an exception to this rule. And here there's a Gemara in Nedarim that says, that quotes Rava, if you're in a place where people don't know you, so then you are allowed to sort of describe yourself in some, positive terms. What's your greatest weakness? They train you in as a high school, maybe even college, how to respond to different interview questions. So
what's your worst
characteristic? Right. My worst trait is that I'm a perfectionist. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, right. Something like that.
Yeah. My worst trait is that I'm so humble. My worst trait is that I'm too orderly. I don't take any risks. Yeah. Either way. So the point is that sometimes there are exceptions and you are allowed to talk about yourself. So Rav Papa apparently over there explains this pasuk. If there is no one to testify about you, then your own mouth must praise you. This is an unbelievable Hasidic drasha. Rav Papa's understanding of the pasuk like this: Yahalel Chazar, vilo, the stranger should praise you, And if not, velo, so then picha. So then you should praise yourself. That is a whopper of a reading of the pasuk. It is not what the pasuk means. But the Rav Papa is making the drasha that sometimes it comes to that necessity.
Yeah, you have to defend yourself, or if you're a stranger.
Yeah.
So you have to speak up because there's no one
else to. Right, right. Yeah, for sure. When you find the necessity to do so, you are allowed to, yeah. Yeah.
Nemt was a German, was a foreigner who came to Russia.
Nemt?
No. So he was, I think it was the name of the town originally.
Mm. That makes sense.
Foreigner, came to Russia, Russianized the name, put Sov at the end.
Nemtsov?
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh. Okay.
He came around, because it was a stranger.
Right, right. Yeah, we got to change the name sometimes. Many have done that, yeah. Okay. Next pasuk, Gimel. Chav Zayin Gimel 27:3. The pasuk says, "Kovet Evan v'netel hachol." This is another one of those interesting analogies that we have to try to figure out. What does it mean that kaved Evan, the weight of a stone, v'netel hachol? Netel is an interesting word. How do you translate netel? Oh, you probably have an art scroll. A mass.
I don't see the difference because weight and mass are the same.
Yeah, sort of. The weight of the Evan and the Netel of the Chol. I have not looked at the Ma'abim. Let's see. I imagine he would say it. Says the Ma'abim, Ha'Evan hu kaved b'fnei atzmo af Evan achad. One stone already has some weight to it. V'ha'chol eno kaved. But one granule of sand is not that heavy. Raki minatel al k'seifav chol harbe. Only if you take a bunch of sand. Only once you gather together multiple, you know, large quantities, I should say, of sand, then it gets heavy. Okay, so what is the point of the heaviness? Says Shlomo Melech, Steve, are you unmuting? I keep hearing you for some reason. So... Kovet Evan Netzachol, the Kas Evil Kaved Mishnehem. But the anger of a fool is heavier than both. The anger of a fool is heavier than both. What does that mean? How is anger heavy?
Literally.
It's not literally, you mean?
Okay, not literally.
What does it mean?
It weighs on you.
Okay, good. Just to use the same idiom in English, it weighs on you, or it's a burden upon you, right? It is, you know, heavy on you, meaning on your attitude, on your mood. A person. So when I read the pasuk, I think Trina is explaining it the way that I understood it originally, that it's referring to the burden of the listener, the victim of one's anger. It's that it's there. It's your that burden. Just like you're the one that carries the stones and the sand, you're the one that is now carrying the anger of that fool. I think Turner, did you understand it otherwise? I missed. I think you remuted. You unmuted and then remuted.
When you're angry, it's a heaviness. Ah,
okay, good. So that is how the Mefarshim explain it. I did not think it that way. But the Mefarshim say, just like Churn, I'm sure they knew what you were going to say, so that's why they said it. But that the person who is angry is feeling this real heavy burden. The fool's anger is weighing heavily on him or her.
It's like you're bearing a grudge. It hurts you more than it hurts the person you're angry.
Yeah, that could be. Right, that definitely could be.
What's the point of
burning
grudges? Just going to eat you up.
Right, so says the Ma'abim. Ki kol kas v'kas b'fnei atzmo, yesh bo kovid b'fnei atzmo, ke'evan ma'amasa, v'gam b'tzirv kol ha'kas ma'atzmin ma'amanu, yesh bo kovid ha'chol. So what is the analogy? Beautiful idea from the Ma'abim. What is the analogy to the stone and the sand? Sometimes a person can get angry because of one heavy thing. One thing bothers him, and it sets them off. But in other times, that person feels the burden of their anger not because of one big thing, but of multiple insistent
small things.
Small things. you keep getting, this thing comes up and that thing's come up. It's not, any one on their own, like a little granule of sand, is not that big of a deal. But when they start to pile up and you've got this person doing that thing wrong, and you let yourself down, you woke up late, then you spilled your coffee, and then you didn't have gas in the tank for your car, so you were late to work. The things just build up. Any one of those, you could deal with one of them. But when they're all together, so it's just compounding, it's compounding your anger, and ultimately it is just as heavy as one big stone. So that's how the Malbim explains the different the two analogous stone and sand symbols. This pasuk is used for Paro. Steve, you have something to say? I don't know why Steve keeps on muting. Maybe he's touching it or something. Okay. But the Malbim continues, says this medrash is used for Paro, that his sin was heavier than his than the stone in this pasuk. And that's why Hashem over and over again hardened his heart, because it's like the chol analogy, that it's over and over again. So Paro had both the Evan and the chol analogy. There was one thing I was going to say otherwise. Yeah, the Evil, the one part of this pasuk which makes it less relatable, hopefully, is the word Evil. The word Evil typically means a fool. Why is it only the fool's anger that has this? And I think sometimes it's self, I think...
Because you can't control it.
Good. Can't control it, I think, is one aspect of it, for sure. I think the pasuk is almost self-definitional, meaning that the person to whom the anger is burdensome, the person to whom all these little things compound and make it heavy for them, that person is a fool, right? And easier said than done, but our job is that when we have a moment of anger, and we're all guilty of this, me included, when we have a moment of anger and frustration, we can't allow that to be heavy on us. We have to be, sort of develop the ability to take a step back, recognize the bigger picture, and understand that this is just a moment in time, and that hopefully you'll get over it. It'll be fine. And you got to figure it out. Sometimes you got to figure it out. This is why the Rambam says, I think it's around, maybe it's in the Gemara even, the Rambam says, I think in Hilchos Deos, that a person should never get angry, except for the times you should, which is when you are trying to teach someone a lesson. Because people, especially people who are immature, respond to that anger not because, not because it's an emotional reaction within you, I mean, hopefully it's not, but because they need the message, right? Later on in the Torah, we know very well the Egel Azav happens, and Hashem says to Moshe Rabbeinu, right? Moshe Rabbeinu is with Hashem. He's with Hashem in heaven, right, in Shemayim, writing down, chiseling out the Luchos, and Hashem says, Ki Saru Ha'am. Saru Maher, Ki, what's the word? I can't remember the word is. The people have sinned. I think it's also Saru. They have veered off. I don't remember. Either way, I don't know what's going on with Steve's mic. But the pasuk says that Hashem tells Moshe Rabbeinu the Jewish people are sinning, and then what happens? Moshe Rabbeinu then goes down the mountain, sees that they're sinning, and throws the luchos down in anger. Wait a second. Hashem already told you that happened. If somebody were to tell you something and then later on you see it yourself, you won't be as angry. And beyond that, if Moshe Rabbeinu really felt that it was justified to destroy the luchos because of what they had done, so then why did he wait until he got down the mountain? Hashem already told you that they sinned. So Moshe Rabbeinu didn't believe Hashem? Say, Hashem, I don't believe it. I'm going to see this for myself. So I think the Sfarno implies, I don't think it's explicit, but I think the Sfarno implies that Moshe Rabbeinu didn't throw down the luchos because he was angry. He threw down the luchos because the Jewish people had to see the luchos broken and see the consequences of their actions and see that there are repercussions when you do things wrong. And in the same sense, the Rambam says a person should never get angry if you're able to take that step back, right, and not be foolish and give in to that burden of anger. So then you take a step back and hopefully you can control your emotions. Not easy. Again, easier said than done. But there are times where your anger is not because of your own, you know, inability to control yourself, but because the other person needs to see that anger. And it's a tempered anger, and it's a symbolic anger, and it's something that just gets the message across. But, you know, we should all be zocha to such a lofty character trait. So that, I think, is what Shlomo Melech is saying, that v'kas evil kaved mishnehem, the anger of a fool is heavy. The anger of a non-fool is not so heavy. I think that's what he's saying, because you're able to take a step back and recognize, keep your emotions in check. Okay. Ach zriyut. That's an interesting way of punctuating. Ach zriyut chema v'shetef af. So it's interesting that we just talked about anger,
yeah,
and now Shlomo is going to talk about it again. Achzriyut is cruelty or wickedness. How does Rashi say it? I'm not sure if there's a difference. Okay.
Cruelty.
Where do you have cruelty?
Yeah, in English, yeah.
Where is it?
I have wrath is cruelty. Okay, it's talking about achzriyut chema. Chema is wrath, meaning like you're not just angry, but you're doing something about it.
Yeah, like heat.
So that, right, good. You're doing something about your anger, you're taking it out on someone, and that is achzriyut, that is wicked, that is cruel. V'shetef af. Shetef af is translated as just anger is torrential. Shetef means to like wash away, I think. Lishtof. Hold on.
Says the Mabu, what's the difference between af and
chema? Chema is anger, wrath, and af is anger without wrath. Says the Mabu, chema hu akas hapanimi shenoter sina belibo. He explains that chema, connected, I guess, to the word cham, like hot, as Meir was saying before, is a reference to inner anger, that your heart starts pumping, you know? V'ha'af hu'akas ha'chitzoni, and af is on the outside. V'yesh af v'lo chema panimis, and there's sometimes that you have anger on the outside without it burning on the inside. V'yesh bo shetef ki ba'apo shotef v'holech v'me'aser.
With your outward anger, with your outward anger, I guess you can sort of let it out.
I think that's what he's saying. It's kind of an interesting concept. About lo achzriyut, but not wickedness. Achzriyut chema means if you have an internal anger, it will linger there. If you have an external anger, at least you can get it out of your system, right? You kind of like, you know, you get some kind of punching bag or something. Let it out. V'yesh chema below af shechamaso bara belibo v'yesh ba'achzerius misin v'chema. It is more cruel to have the internal anger than the external. Aval lo shetef, it doesn't wipe away anything. Ki eno manish ata aval hakina. But then afterwards says the pasuk umiyamod lifnei kina. But who can withstand jealousy? Jealousy is even stronger than anger.
Interesting phrase.
Hold on. Yeah, this point, this is an article footnote here. This point is illustrated by a parable of a king who made an offer to two subjects, one a lustful person and the other a jealous person. The king said that he would fulfill any request that either of the two would make, and whatever that person received, his fellow would receive double. The lustful person was silent because he wanted to receive double of whatever the jealous person requested. The jealous person would not request a lavish gift because he didn't want his friend to be given double. Instead, he said to the king, "Poke out one of my eyes," thus assuring that his fellow would become blind in both eyes.
Yeah. I think there's another joke, a lawyer joke like that. Yeah. I think, did I say it in shul once? Maybe I said it in shul. Or that I want to donate my kidney. No. I saw a genie asks a person, you can have wishes, yeah, but your lawyer is going to get 10, you know, double whatever you get. You know, he says money, so he gets a lot of money. He said, "I wish I could donate my kidney," and then the lawyer loses both of his kidneys. Anyways,
yeah, I know similar joke.
Yeah, there's a lot of jokes like that. The point is that that's how strong jealousy is. Even if it is going to, you're going to lose out on certain things. It's more important for the other person not to have than for you to have. The verse warns that hatred born of envy is the worst kind of anger. Ordinarily, hot-heated people can be appeased. This is what we just said from Mamabim. But the anger of envious people is uncurable. This is very relevant to today, right? We live in a world where we see what everybody else has, as opposed to being satisfied with what we have ourselves. We look next to our neighbor, we look across the street, we look on Instagram and Facebook and Twitter and stuff like that. And we just get jealous. You know what happens to me? I'm not on Facebook and Instagram, but I do follow Twitter. And it happens to me in a different way. It's the same kind of jealousy, but I guess my jealousy. The Rambam says there are two character traits, one of which we just mentioned, that one should never have. One is anger, and one is haughtiness. But he doesn't mention anything about jealousy. And that's because I think jealousy is sometimes healthy if it's for a good thing.
Yeah,
we call it kinas sofrim. If somebody else is learning well, so you want to learn just like them. So it's not a bad, it might be low lishma, it's not ideal and sincere and you know, altruistic, but it will lead to a good thing. Either way, so that's why I like to think of my jealousies, but you know, sometimes I see, you know, this rabbi went on this mission and did all these good things, I'm like, well, I should be doing that kind of thing, you know? Or this rabbi is giving that topic of a shir, and I'm like, oh, I wish I thought of that idea, you know? Not to say that I can't do those things, but it's just not as as exciting if it's just copying somebody else.
Could be that the jealousy or envy could last longer because the anger is torrential.
Right.
It comes down
so that's how the art scroll is explaining it. Right. Nowadays, and that's what I was sort of on before I took a detour. Yeah. That was the path I was going down, which is that with all this Facebook and all the Twitter and all the social media and all the magazines and everything like that, so we live in a world which is trying to, you know, bombard us with jealousy triggers, right? Things that will make us jealous of everybody else. Yeah, Cherna.
Oh, sorry. Is there a difference between envy and jealousy?
I don't know. Is there?
Yeah, probably.
I couldn't.
Just a translation.
There are different words, so at least they have different uses or maybe implications. I'm not familiar with it. Maybe Joseph knows more than I, or at least maybe his computer knows more than I. Either way, I can't think of anything off the top of my head. I'm not sure. But there's also the word covet. What does covet mean? I don't know. So I quoted a couple times now this book, Stolen Focus, by Johann Hari, where he talks about how technology has not just caused these, you know, jealousy tendencies, but has deliberately put them in front of us. Meaning that they understand the human psyche, they being the technology companies and the inventors is the right word, but the algorithm creators, I guess, and they understand what is going to make us feed, you know, what's going to feed us what our animalistic desires want, And they literally force feed us things that will make us jealous, force feed us things that will make us scared, force feed us things, anything that will trigger our most basic instinctive desires. That's what they'll do. And he talks a lot about the sort of the death scroll. You just keep scrolling. The endless scroll is like a, you know, it used to be, maybe you remember this, I remember this, that early computers and early internet, if you wanted to see the next page of something, you do this when you're shopping, you have to click next page, right? Now on social media, have you ever noticed this? Social media doesn't have a next page button. You just keep going down into the endless pit of jealousy and anger triggers, right? Just keep going down. There's no end to the page. And this is one of the things that I think he speaks about in this book. He speaks about, you know, some of the, I don't know if legislation is the right word, but it's some of the campaigns that he has. One is that they should reinstitute the next page button. Give people a moment to at least consider not looking. That doesn't mean that they're necessarily going to not click on it, but our brains are in some kind of like cascade of ongoing, a dopamine that is just constantly being refueled as we scroll lower and lower and lower. And we're all guilty of it. It's just a matter of, can you suck yourself out of it for a moment, just a moment, to sort of, you know, snap back to reality or take a step back. And he thinks that one click of a button could be very helpful. What do you have, Joseph?
What it seems to be is that envy is a state of wanting what somebody else has or is doing, but jealousy is a state of feeling insecure or overprotective about something we are afraid we will lose. And it usually involves a third party.
All right. I don't think I hear that, but at least not the way people use it. But if that's the literal definition, then that's helpful, I guess. Which is why
there are several different definitions. That seems to be the idea of it.
Okay. Interesting. Good to know. I'll learn something new every day. But that's maybe that's why the article uses the word envy, because that doesn't seem like it fits within this pasuk. But it definitely would. Envy would definitely fit. Either way, a concept that we've seen over and over again. Lastly, we'll just say this last pasuk, Chav Zayin Hey. Tova tochachas megula me'ahava mesuteres. This is such a beautiful. It's beautiful on both sides of the pasuk. I'll just translate it, and I don't even have to talk about this, although I will. I don't have to talk about this to see the beauty of this pasuk. Better, more significant is the rebuke which is out in the open than the love which is concealed. Better is rebuke that is out in the open than the love which is concealed. It's such a beautiful contrast, because what good is concealed love? Okay, Shkach, you love me. But I don't know that. You never told me that, right? This is, you know, very common today. You know, my children know that I love them. Really? Are you sure? Because have you ever said it? Have you ever actually said those words, I love you, I'm proud of you, right? That goes a long way. And then the Nitziv talks about that. I don't know where he talks about that. I think I mixed it up once. But the Nitziv says, the Mishnah in Avo says, Chaviv Adam Shenivra B'Tzelem, Chaviv in Yisrael, Shenikru Banam Lamakom. Says the Nitziv, what do you mean? Chaviv in Yisrael, Shenikru Banam Lamakom? You know, beloved are the Jewish people who are called the children of Israel. No, that we are the children of Israel. The Jewish people should be beloved because we are the children of Israel. What does it mean that we are called the children of Israel? Says the Nitziv, that's the point. It's one thing to be the children of Israel, but it's another thing to be called that. For Hashem to say, you are my children. That's an added level that we can hear Hashem say that. That's another added level. There's one thing to be loved, and there's another thing to be told that you're loved. Those are two different things. And sometimes we conflate the two, and it's not always apparent why we need to, but you should. So that's what it says here in Shlomo Melech. Me'ahava mesuteres. You might love them, but if you don't tell them, so it's better that you would rebuke them openly. Now, rebuking is not comfortable, but you know what it does? It improves the person. It makes them better people. Now, we've talked 100 times about how to rebuke and do it nicely, doing it with love, doing it with a foundation of support, you know, and the infrastructure around them so that they feel like they're not just being cast aside, but rather just, you know, trying to be built up through criticism. What they call the scaffolding. I'm just reading a book now called Hidden Potential, Adam Grant's new book. And he talked about that, the scaffolding, which is necessary to lift a person up by criticizing them, to make them better by criticizing them. But you need to have the scaffolding in place, yeah, right? The analogy of the scaffolding, which is the scaffolding is there to allow the workers to improve the building. But it's immediately there because they might fall down, right? So it's that two-step where, like, you're criticizing them, so you might be bringing them down, but you make sure the scaffolding is there so that they can do their job and improve their edifice. So the same type of thing here. Tova tochachas migila. Greater is the open rebuke than the concealed love. It's such a beautiful pasuk. It's so beautiful because we get it so backwards, in both directions. We get it backwards in thinking, I don't want to make them feel bad by telling them what they're doing wrong. I'll just ignore it and let it fester inside of me for months and months and months until one day I'm going to blow up and just get really angry at them. Right? For some reason, we think that's a better option than just telling them what they did wrong. Is that uncomfortable? Yes, of course it's uncomfortable. But sometimes, you know, no pain, no gain. If you're not going to tell them, they're not going to improve. And that the greatest form of love is sometimes to tell people things that are uncomfortable. It's easier to love one than when they're doing well, right? So as Brené Brown says in Daring to Lead, you know, clarity is kind. Disclarity is unclarity. I think disclarity. Disclarity is unkind. If you're not clear with somebody, so you're not being nice to them. It is unkind to conceal something from someone. And on the other, in the other side, as I said before, we think Ava Misuteris is not bad. You know, I love them. Maybe they don't know, they'll hear it every day, but, you know, I'm sure they know that I love them. No, they don't. They don't know that, right? So on both ends of this puzzle, there's such a beautiful encapsulation, because if I were to give a person a choice, okay, you can love someone silently, or you can rebuke them openly, which one would you take? Oh, love. Love is always better. No. If you're going to love them silently, it actually is detrimental to your relationship, because they don't know that. And it could just be a bunch of question marks all the time. I wonder if they love me. Am I doing things right? You know, how do they feel about me? It'll just, you know, again, a festering, you know, concealment. And on the other hand, you might think, well, rebuking them openly, that's not a good thing. No, that's exactly what you're supposed to do if you can do it the right way. So there's a beautiful pasuk on both sides of the equation. We don't have to look at the mefarshim. We understand it already, how beautiful it is. Tova tachachas megula me'ahava mesuteres. This is one of those that I have to sort of pin on my wall or something. Tova tochachas megula me'ahava mesuteres. If I was one of those people that put inspirational quotes on my social media, this is one that I would put up from Shlomo Melech. Greater is the open rebuke than the concealed love. All right, with that we will close, and Mirtz Hashem pick up next week. Next week we have Legends and Lessons. 2 weeks, Mirtz Hashem, 2 weeks. Legends and Lessons, I don't know who it is yet, so don't ask me. But everyone should be well. Have a good night and good week.
In that last passage, I'm sorry to
hear you. You're good.
Just reading the English,